Hello and welcome to the Open Talent Report. This is the podcast where we discuss the emerging trends in labor law, employment law, independent work, and the gig economy, which many organizations are wrestling with due to the growth of the open talent and gig economy. I'm your host, Conor Heaney. When I'm not presenting the podcast, I'm the MD at CXC Global, EMEA, which compliantly connects talent and opportunity. Hello and welcome to this week's podcast. I'm delighted to welcome this week's guest, Mark Brooks-Lewis, who is the CEO and founder of Lavasource HR. I've had the pleasure of getting to know Mark through our work with the Open Assembly and the Global Sourcing Association. Mark, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. How the hell are you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you, Connor. And I really appreciate you allowing me on to talk a little bit about what we're doing at Lavasource HR. Really excited to be heard by your listeners, the many thousands of them.
You're very kind and generous on all fronts, Mark. So thank you again and welcome. So, Mark, what is the Mark story? How did you end up in the world of human capital? And then how did you end up in the world of human capital technology?
So the usual story, I think, for many people who ended up in HR, people-centric, service-orientated folks who somehow fell into HR and then just really liked the way that HR works. So I spent the first 10 years of my career. I've got a long memory now, so that's some time ago. But I spent from the 99 to around 2010 in a variety of HR roles, real HR jobs, disciplinaries, grievances, the core face stuff, right up through to the end of 2010. And by that point, I'd moved more into HR consulting. From there, I did some management consulting for the next few years. And then for the last 4, 5, 6 years, I've run large HR transformation programs, typically with a large transformation of technology component as well. So Workday, Oracle, SAP transformations, but really blending the change of operating procedures, service model, as well as the technology. So I really enjoyed doing that. Right up until probably the point halfway through COVID, where I guess like most people, we all had a stop and think about what we're doing now and what we want to do for the rest of our lives. And that's where the Lavasource story comes in.
And Mark, I can't wait to hear about Lavasource HR. So Mark, for the benefit of our listeners, what problem or challenges is Lavasource HR trying to solve?
So that's a great question. So when I was running these transformation programs, there were some real problems that I was facing as a program manager. And they were, as far as I could tell, the same types of problems that other people in similar roles to me were facing. Difficulty getting a hold of good quality technical resources. And that's on the client side and on the supplier side as well. Many years ago, organizations used to, as you probably know, run large benches of people. So that if there was a problem, other people could be drafted in at short notice. That's not really the way that the lean modern world works. So any time there was an unforeseen activity, it puts huge amounts of pressure onto programs. I always felt like I was looking for people quickly, great quality people, but I could never find them. So midway through the COVID period, I became aware of talent marketplaces like Fiverr, like Upwork, like freelancer.com. And I could see that they were doing some really great things. And I thought, well, if there was somewhere that had something for HR and HR technology, and all of those great people and resources I was looking for were in one place, wouldn't that really help me as a program manager? And I thought, well, it would probably help everybody if we could just create the same thing. So it was born out of a real world need to fix a problem, which hopefully gives something a little bit more legs because you're solving something real rather than building something and hoping that it will come. And that's where the whole journey started from. I think there was as well a real kind of desire to smash some glass ceilings as well. And this is probably when you work in HR and you see different ways of working all around the world, and you see some great people and they all have amazing skills, but it's not always possible for people with those skills to get to clients, whether it be they're in a different country or they've got home circumstances that mean that they can't commute on a 9-to-5 basis like the old world used to work. And I just thought it would be great for people with those skills to be able to get onto the platform, and for people like me at the time who are looking for the great skill sets that were out there but I couldn't reach, to just be able to connect the two. So it just means that hopefully we can widen the access to the greater pool of skills that exists by creating the platform that connects the two.
Mark, I love it. And I love the fact that you focused on a specific segment. I think oftentimes some of the larger talent marketplaces have an abundance of multiple types of talent, but it's often the case where the talent might not be as carefully curated, let's say, or relevant for what the end client might need. And I think the problem you're trying to solve is, as my grandfather always describes, a high class problem. And it sounds like you've got the solution to that problem. But Mark, if we could look further back, if we may, into your career, I'd be keen to get your insights, because the problem you're trying to solve, I get it. It's really a supply and demand issue, right? And you're really, I suppose, helping foster the hire anyone, anywhere movement, albeit compliantly, which is obviously a good thing, right? You're giving your customers access to a global talent pool of HR or change or HR transformation specialists. And I'm sure the list goes on and on within the HR domain. But it strikes me, and this isn't a problem that maybe we can solve together, but I'm interested in your view on this, Mark. Have you seen anything in large organizations that has really impressed you when it comes to resource demand planning? Because it strikes me that very few organizations get this right. And because they don't get it right, it really means that they don't get the talent they need when they need it. So instead of getting their talent just in time or first in time, they're getting it last in time. Now, part of that is because of the, I guess, it's the distribution and matching of talent. But it strikes me that the biggest problem when it comes to acquiring the talent you need is actually organizations' ability to work out, well, what talent do we need and when? And does that talent actually exist within our organization? So I appreciate that was a rather long question, Mark, but really it relates to your views on resource demand planning. Is it a problem, and is it an opportunity to be solved?
Yeah, I had another great question. I think that if I look back at the deployment of those big HCM, human capital management systems, and the transformations I've looked after, internal resource planning or mobility has always been something that's almost been put to one side. Career models, training, long-term planning to be able to fix a short-term solution is how organizations have typically looked at this. We've seen people being flown all around the world in expensive expat contracts to fix local problems. And that's how large organizations have tended to look at that situation from as long back as I can remember, certainly in terms of the mid to late 90s as well. And when you look at some of the new things that are out there, where Gloat, for instance, as an example, are using internal talent marketplaces, I think that's a great idea. But again, you're using the same group of people with the same cultural understanding, and you're not really bringing in new, fresh ideas and fresh talent to evolve the thinking and the diversity of an organization. And so I'm not sure that that's the whole answer. I think that where organizations ought to be looking is really blending better use of mobility internally and being able to reskill their labor force, but also looking at supplementing that with external market capabilities so that new ideas can come in, new thinking, but also blending the two together so that if one of the competitors, for example, comes up with a new skill set that a client requires, and your internal talent needs 6 to 9 months or possibly longer to retrain to get that capability, well, if your competitor's already got that and their nearest competitor can go onto a marketplace and find it in a few hours, that's just leaving organizations from an operational perspective in a really difficult position where the capability you need might be there in 6 to 9 months and your competitors are finding it in 6 to 9 hours. Well, that I don't think all goes well for a successful future. So I think there's a bunch of different things in there, but I think blended model for me certainly seems to make sense, where you're not forgetting about your internal labor force because they all need to be looked after. They all need to be engaged in different ways than they've been in the past, for sure. But also blending in some new people that can really freshen up those ideas and give you access to the things that your customers are looking for at the time and quality that you're looking to bring them in.
Yeah, Mark, I subscribe to your analysis there and I fully concur with it. And it strikes me, if you think about resource demand planning, if it's done right, it should, of course, make the process more efficient, but theoretically, it should reduce your cost because you don't have these expensive consultants that you have to pull out of a hat to drop into Dubai or New York or Sydney or wherever the hell it is. And, you know, if you can get that right, then you can get the right resource at the right time at the right cost instead of paying exorbitant amounts when you get the resource last in time because you've had no other option. That's my probably rather simplistic view on it. But Mark, if we can just focus back on Lavasource HR, because I think the platform and your product or service is a great bloody idea. And Mark, was that born out of frustration with how typical staffing vendors operate and that inefficiency between the end user or buyer of staffing services? Or do you think that the way you're positioned is completely different when compared to a staffing vendor?
Yeah, I think that definitely there was some frustration in there. I personally had a network that I'd spent many years building, and I had some great recruitment partners who really understood the types of quality resource that I was looking for. Even they only have a limited network of people that they can go to. And so the first thought was the bigger we make that pool of talent, the better the chances of finding the capability and quality of capability as well as price, whether it be the same or cheaper, typically cheaper, that was available. And so there was a frustration part to it. The second part, and it connects to some of the things that were in that previous point, I think, old ways of working remain very prominent in the minds of the back office function from a governance perspective. I think that small, nimble, medium type size organizations are benefiting from new technologies, new ways of working. But if I look at some of the big blue chip organizations that I've supported in the past, really robust but very mature and traditional ways of working. So there'd be a very long contract, for instance, that you would need to bring a new supplier on board, and there'd be 100 things that you'd need to check. There is an awareness that security and all the things that need to be in place to give an organization the types of resource they require, but the speed with which that process needs to happen, two things that are definitely not in sync. And by the time that you go through that process, typically the person or the skill that you were looking for has been snapped up by a slightly more nimble, more effective partner or customer as well. So I think there's definitely a way for big organizations to go in order to benefit from and evolve the way that they source talent. And we're trying to make that process easier for them. But for sure, it's an education process, the larger the size of the organization, because of the number of people and governance and processes that need to be adhered to unlock the talent for those companies. And I think that that probably has to change, or we have to find a balanced way of helping them through that process more quickly than is currently the case.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. And Mark, if we can, I'd like to look at something that The Economist, the World Economic Forum, and the Financial Times of London have all described as the labour market paradox. And to paraphrase them, essentially, what they're saying is there's never been more people unemployed than at any time in history. And every single, or not every single, but many large, medium-sized and small organizations cannot find the talent they need. So really my question is in two parts, Mark. In your view, what is the reason for this labor market paradox as described by those organizations? And two, in your view, what can be done, if anything, to solve the labor market paradox?
Yeah, it's been building for many years as well, hasn't it? And I think that the coronavirus itself has accelerated some of these problems by increasing the demand on digital and more technical skills. But I think for anybody who's been in this space for the last probably 10, 15 years, it's been a growing awareness that that dawn is coming. And those who saw it more quickly are probably better prepared right now than others. I think from a company perspective, they certainly need to shift the way that they work with internal and external labour. I think the point I made earlier about how long it can take to deliver or to acquire the skills that the customers are asking for, there's not any realistic possibility that the old style career models where somebody can go on a training course for four months and some of that will be in a classroom and some of it will be in the workplace, and suddenly they'll acquire the skills to be able to provide the end customer the service that they're looking for. Well, that end customer is looking for that capability today or yesterday, so waiting for several months to build that internal capability in the traditional way is just completely out the window. So I think looking at how learning management works from a large organization perspective is certainly something that HR and operational leadership teams need to look at. I think that company culture is another one. I think we've all witnessed through our careers this is how we do it here, and a recruitment process, whether it be for a permanent person or for a relatively short-term individual, would require someone to be able to demonstrate that they fit within the company culture. Well, the whole point often of bringing in fresh, new, diverse ideas is that you want something new. And if you're trying to make it fit every time, then you're unconsciously and in a very biased way excluding many of the people who ought not to be excluded, and B, you're really losing out on all the talent and the fresh ideas that you need to evolve your organization. So I think there's something in there as well about company culture and the not doing it as we've always done it. I think there's a piece in there for government as well. If we look really macro at this, my children asked me, and this is one of the reasons I set up LavaSource in the first place, they asked me what type of job they would be able to do when they finish school. And I thought, well, I could probably half answer that question right now. And I'm in a space where I've got a reasonable understanding of future of work, but I couldn't really guide them properly because I knew that what they're learning in school, the educational path that they're going through, was created, 150 years ago. And the fact that we continue to educate people in many of the countries in the world exactly as we did 150 years ago, whilst the technology world that they're moving into is completely different to that, it feels like there's a misalignment between how we prepare people for work on a macro basis and the work that they are then going to be asked to do when they get through their academic schooling. And there was a really good example that the Egyptian government went through with, I think it was freelancer.com and Ubiquity, I want to say. I don't think I've got their name completely correctly, but I like the way that they, from a balance between government and industry and marketplaces really brought the three things together to help tens of thousands of people potentially retrain from the skills that they had into the skills that industry are looking for, and to be able to create that as a product that could be sold out with the location of Egypt. So I think that there needs to probably be a fundamental shift and better balance between how industry leaders and governments work together to look at academia and to really think through what is that path that we need our children going through so that they're better prepared for the skills that are going to be required when they reach the end of their academic learning. I think that's probably the biggest one. There's two final points, I guess. I think that I was always afraid personally of this concept that if technology continued to advance at the speed it was, what would happen to all of the manual jobs that used to be there in the past? What would happen to those people? And for sure, there will be a loss of old jobs, but there will also be, to balance this out, the creation of lots of new jobs that will require new skills. And hopefully, if we can take that point I made about better educating people and skilling them through their school period, they're better prepared to do that work. But also, I think balancing the two and giving the people who are in semi-technical roles better aids, better technology to allow them to do their work in a more efficient way, I think will help organizations be able to deliver better services to their clients in the future and use big data and all the other capabilities that we always hear about, but often feel just one step removed from how most people might be able to use them. And I guess the final thing in terms of how do organizations take that first step in making this happen, I think risk is a massive thing for big companies. And when you've got lots of different teams involved in that, you've got HR, legal, procurement, IT, and everybody wants their seat at the table. I think that for those organizations to be able to easily get to marketplaces and use them and benefit from the skills that are there, certainly the, and I don't want to make this all about you guys, but certainly the offering that you have in terms of helping them to balance that risk so that they're getting the governance that they're really looking for as a large organization, but also the access to that immediate talent. I think that's going to be a first step for many large organizations where they move slowly in many cases and in other cases slightly faster through that maturity journey from how they used to work to how they need to operate to avoid being the at risk of substitution from new clients doing similar things to them just in a more efficient way in the future.
Yeah, and you know, Mark, I hope there's some policy makers listening to the podcast, because I think you've given a really excellent case and manifesto for change in terms of what can be done to practically solve the labour market paradox. And there was a thought occurred to me as you were speaking, Mark, and I hope you don't find this question unfair in any way, but assuming jobs displacement continues for economic factors because of automation and other fourth industrial wave factors that most of our listeners will be familiar with, and some of those jobs or people that have been displaced cannot be replaced in other areas, do you think that there is a legitimate case now to have a universal basic income in places like the UK and Ireland? But I know you're based in the UK, but what's your thoughts on that, Mark?
Oh, do you know, I was talking with somebody about this yesterday, and it is, it's a humanity question, this, isn't it? It's not necessarily anything about marketplaces or anything else. This is very much correct. About how you see the world. I think that in places like the Nordics, where they've had a very inclusive societal approach to the world, and that has matured, and the people who are operating within those systems and countries, they've all got used to why that's important. And I know that homelessness in, I want to say Denmark, might be Finland, definitely one of those countries has been cured as a consequence of taking that more holistic approach. And so I think where the systems and the culture allows for that way of working, I think that has to be a very positive thing for humanity. I think there are parts of the world where, because of how life is, and it is tough if you go to India and the Philippines and some other parts of the world where life is very different to how it is for you and I, where even water and electricity and food are hard to come by. You know, this whole concept of giving them some minimum standards is unfathomable for the for the governments of those countries, because the challenges that they have are very different. So I think the part of me that wants humanity to become better, to evolve, to really balance things out so that everybody has something fair in front of them, would absolutely support this. I think the challenges in some parts of the world are what they were decades ago. And I think that that's definitely something I think we'd all like to fix. And it sometimes feels that the equality, certainly over the last 2 or 3 years, has almost been widening rather than narrowing. And I guess this goes back to one of the reasons why LavaSource was created in the first place. When I saw some of the capability and skills that were in certain parts of the world I was visiting, I realized that those people could earn more money, could work for clients that they really wanted to. They just needed access to make that happen. So, you know, the platform gives them a better chance of earning more money to help their families to have better lives. But you know, it goes a long way away from the real problem, which you talked about quite correctly, which is how do we balance everything. And I think, I guess we all have to do our bit. And maybe this is how the world gets to be better. If everybody just takes, you know, one positive step and we all move forward as 7.5 billion people positively, then we're an awful lot closer than we would be without it.
Yeah, I like that. It sounds a bit to me like the aggregation of marginal gains there, Mark. So for anyone that knows the England rugby team back under Clive Woodward, I think it was get a 1% improvement in 100 things, 100 different things, and you'll become a much better organization or team. So I love that. And Mark, just if we go back to what you just said there about LavaSource HR, I love that idea that you're affording access of opportunity and increased earnings potential for people that might not otherwise have been able to access that in the traditional, I work in country A, I support country A company, <Yeah. laughs> I get paid in country A money, and therefore I'm stuck in country A. Whereas the hire anyone, anywhere movement essentially affords access of opportunity, but also it has potential cost saving or labor arbitrage opportunities or talent arbitrage opportunities for your end user. So let's look at this, for example, Mark. You've got a large global enterprise in USA. They want to hire a HR transformation director. It's going to cost them, let's say, $250,000 plus, right?
Yeah.
But then you might have the same talent in Poland, which has one of the fastest growing English-speaking populations in Europe and one of the best educated populations in Europe. And you might be able to get that same person with equivalent skills or better for half the cost. So you're not only giving that person in Poland access to more money because, you know, $125,000 is quite a good salary in Poland. You're also affording your clients the opportunity to save money and take advantage of labor arbitrage. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think so. I think that labor arbitrage has in itself been around from the old IBM, do it less, 20% for less, and every contract would just be, we can take 20% off. And that was how large organizations worked in the 90s. Then it became nearshore. So that the whole balance of data and cost were both taken into consideration. And I think large organizations that are trying to make their budgets stretch further are definitely looking at the cost of the resources. But I think that, and we've spoken to a lot of clients over the last few months, just trying to establish exactly what they would be looking for from Larvisource HR so that when we built it, it was in line with their requirements. And cost was definitely one of the key things, but quality continues to come to the top of the tree time and time again anyway. So I think it's a balance of everybody is looking to find that great capability and to select from a global pool of talent, which of course is what you get if you go to a marketplace rather than perhaps more traditional sourcing mechanisms that are country-based, so that you're accessing the skills when you need them and at the price that you need them, but without any loss of quality. And I think that the people who are in many of these locations that are bubbling up as hotspots for key talent are the ones who are pushing hardest to learn, that they are keener, more hungry than perhaps more traditional locations that, you know, they say we've grown fat in the West. And in many cases, that's quite literally true, because we just don't maybe have collectively the same hunger, because the bar we have to climb over isn't as high as it is for other parts of the world. So I think what drives you, how hard you have to work, really sets a standard, and will continue to set a standard. And we're definitely going to see a leveling off as marketplaces become more global, as organizations realize they can access talent from anywhere at any time, and work can be done more comfortably from away from the office, which of course is the big key thing that's come on as a consequence of COVID for many organizations. I think we'll definitely see a rebalancing of where work is done from, and that will have a knock-on effect of reallocating funds to different parts of the world so that those areas do better as economies and the people therein, and organizations that are looking for those skills will be able to benefit from labor arbitrage, but without losing the quality side as well. So, and you know, the competitive continued difference, and it's something it's an area that we would like to change moving forward. But this continued concept of the use of English, it's such an advantage for us, isn't it, that we don't often think about how hard it is for people who don't speak English as their first language to really benefit from the new world as easily as we do. And I think that's definitely one of those key next perhaps developmental spaces where it isn't a barrier for us to be able to access that talent as it remains today. And that would be great to change.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. And Mark, if we look at the wider marketplace space, if that's okay, not just focus on you guys, because I don't think that's fair, but this is a very general question. So it strikes me that enterprises, when they're talking to marketplaces, are really looking for four things. They're looking for potential cost savings or labor arbitrage opportunities. They're looking for access and ease of acquiring talent anywhere, right? They're looking for quality to ensure that talent can do what the platforms are saying that it can do and what the people on the platforms claim they can do, right? But then they're also looking for this fourth piece, and I've underlined this here in my notes, which is the compliance and governance piece. And it strikes me on a general basis that there's a disconnect between what the enterprise wants and oftentimes what the marketplace can give, the talent marketplaces can give, particularly as it relates to that last fourth point. Do you agree with that analysis, or is it slightly unfair in your view?
I would agree. And I touched upon it earlier, Connor, but I think that there's a number of things here. Look, so marketplaces themselves are often very kind of tech-centric. They've been built with a great idea at its heart, and they have a real use case, but actually being able to allow enterprises to really tap into successfully using those marketplace capabilities is a difficult thing to do if you don't consider where enterprises are coming from. So the two things must meet. And I think marketplaces that I've seen, certainly when we were doing our market research before setting up LavaSource, we're not necessarily thinking through how to open up that particular problem. Organizations themselves have this huge governance overhead. They've got very mature, robust ways of working where IT, HR, procurement, resource management, depending on whether that sits in HR or not, the bunch of different things that have been built up in many cases over decades of time, and just trying to turn that on its head overnight is perhaps naive for marketplaces to think that that's how it would work. So definitely something needs to bridge the gap. Marketplaces need to really come together under one banner. And I like the work the Open Assembly and the Global Sourcing Association, the GSA in the UK, are doing to try to bring in some standards and to create a taxonomy, a way of working, so that organizations and marketplaces can really start to talk the same language and to really channel how they might work together. But for sure, the next few months, few years, whatever that time frame is, requires something in the middle for large organizations to really take that first step. And this is one of the reasons that we really like the work that you're doing at CXC, where you're effectively helping organizations bridge the gap between the capability they need and the speed that they need it within to be able to deliver the customers those new, fresh capabilities that they're being asked for without waiting for the internal 6 to 9 months of training and reskilling that I mentioned earlier are achievable within a timeframe that is needed to make their businesses efficient. And I think that, that's definitely going to open up for an increasingly large number of organizations the path to balancing or blending the sourcing channels that they can use to meet those demands in the short to medium term. And I don't see an immediately quick alternative because of the need to assure governance in large enterprises in a way that meets with the needs of all of those other departments. So certainly the partnership that we hope to have with you guys will help us to allow organizations to unlock the skills in our marketplace, but with the certainty and confidence that the governance is in place to meet their old traditional needs as well.
Yeah, and Mark, I think it's a really fascinating business challenge for both the enterprise and the talent marketplaces, because I think the talent marketplaces like your own, and of course there's others, and there's other companies other than CXE as well, just to, for the benefit of our listeners. But it strikes me that platforms like yours and others, Mark, really solve a lot of the problems. You're able to potentially solve the talent scarcity problem. You increase the need for speed. You can give that resource speedily. You can deliver resources at scale and volume, and you can cater for specific niche opportunities. And I suppose if you can give the organizations that comfort, assurance, and reassurance that the governance model underpinning that is appropriate for their needs, then you really are in the right place at the right time, because the war for talent is real, right? As everyone knows.
Absolutely.
The man or woman in the street can feel it, right? And they can hear it, and they're reading about it. And it's really entered into the public consciousness through news media, not just in The Economist and the FT and, Business Week and, really august publications. It's in the news now, right? Your 6 o'clock or 9 o'clock news. So I think platforms like yours, Mark, and others are in the right place at the right time to really solve these challenges in the short, medium, and long term. And Mark, if we can move to the future now, if we may, I love this question, and I hope you don't find it too trite, but if you had a magic wand, what one labor law would you change?
Yeah, it's, I like the magic wand scenario, because ultimately, if you can't dream, if you can't hope, then it's a very boring world ahead of you. So I think that this is how all new ideas come from somewhere, somebody, and then someone in power, hopefully, hears one from time to time and puts them in place, because that's, I think, how the world works. So for me, I think this would be all around the contracting process. And I think it starts selfishly in my case, because we're doing HR and HR technology and change. But I think that at the heart of how organizations will evolve their ways of working is the way that HR sees marketplaces and can change the internal procedures and the contracting processes so that organizations can benefit from marketplaces and other new capabilities. And so for me, I think that I would certainly like to see the contract process and the way the law looks at traditional ways of engagement and contracting employment to move along with the times. I know that there are still lots and lots of contracts which have written into them the denial for somebody to work for somebody else because of the need to tie them into that employer. And that was okay, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. But if I'm doing 40 hours of work as a Workday or an SAP project manager, and I've suddenly got 20 hours a week that I used to commute to work or commute to a different country, and now that is available time I would like to use to earn more money, then I'd like to be able to spend that working for another client and earning more money. So those other clients can access the same skills that are out there more efficiently. And I can earn extra money with the time I'd like to spend enhancing, refreshing my skills and just providing better for my family. So I think that for me, it's about, you know, legal contracts, labor contracts, and the way that courts may see how freelancers and people who want to do work of a freelance nature are treated when they are either in contract roles or in permanent roles and just want to do something additional with their time. And currently that may be something they see and fear, because an employer may turn around and say, actually, we won't let you work for somebody else because you're tied to us for these 40 hours a week.
I like that answer, Mark, and hopefully there's some legislators or judge genies that will grant your wish. So, Mark, moving on, if we may, over the last 12 months, and I know you've obviously launched your own technology platform business, but you spent a lot of time in the Workday and HR transformation space. And what I'd be really keen to understand, Mark, is this. Over the last 12 to 18 months, is there a piece of HR tech, other than your own, of course, Mark, that you've seen that's really impressed you?
Yeah, I think for me with HR tech, it's always been about what you do with it. And I was lucky enough to run some Oracle implementations, then I did some Workday, then I did some SAP, and they've all got some fantastic capabilities that advance the cause of HR, and they advance the cause of the organizations themselves, and increasingly more to drive self-service so that people can use them in the same way that they consume and use products in their everyday lives. But for me, it's always about the wider transformation of what it is people are doing with that technology and how the service changes, the interactions, the ways of working, and that's more important. And I think that, if I'm honest, the tech seems to be advancing at a rapid rate. The deployment speed of technology is increasing because we're all used to getting our weekly updates on our phones, that the app we looked at one week looks nothing like it did the week before, and it's a constant kind of getting used to something again. And it feels a little bit like that with technology, that there's a real drive to bring out something new because there's a demand for it. But actually, the change process, the adoption and getting used to technology within organizations, that part is now falling behind because everybody is probably too much focused on the tech. And really less focused on the impact that technology is having on the people who are using it. And then what I think you end up getting is diminishing returns where you can't really get people used to how they benefit from the technologies and integrate it positively into their working lives because they're constantly trying to work out what that next thing does. And they haven't quite worked out what the last thing did. So I think there definitely needs to be perhaps a balance of what tech is needed to fix which problems and how we're going to get people to adopt and think more about change management and service and not purely about tech. But I've also seen some fantastic technologies that have come out which really blend the needs of the organization, the data that is sitting out with that organization and really help the talent platform and sourcing cycle. And I will give them a shout out. It's probably unfair of me to do so, but I'm going to do it anyway. But there's an organization called Phenom, which is a HR technology that looks at talent in a very different way. And I was, very impressed. It's almost like a Glort Plus. If you're thinking about the capability of Glort and looking at an internal marketplace, but then looking at how you slightly expand that and consider the wider talent acquisition process, they're really up there with the use of technology. But fundamentally, it's about the problem you're trying to fix and being really clear about the reasons you're trying to fix it, having enough time to do it properly and to help people through that journey and maximizing the use of the technology remains the biggest challenge for me in terms of the transformation agenda that the clients are asking for. Not can I put Workday in 3 months quicker than I did last time, or can I change Workday SAP because it has fundamentally different things from a user capability perspective, and ultimately that's not enough of a reason to change. In my mind, it's just doing things better, not doing things differently.
Love it. And Mark, looking again to the future. So Mark, we'd like to close out our podcast with this question. What, if any, is your prediction, Mark, for the future of work?
That is magic ball territory, isn't it? I think that I see a continued movement of work being done both in the workplace and away from the workplace. I don't think there's any turning that back because that was already an agenda that everybody was following. And there was going to be a blended way of teams and individuals working at home and at the office. But I don't see permanently working from home as being the answer. I like the blended models where teams can come together for the purposes that they need to be together in one location. But also using collaboration tools and being able to interact with one another away from the office as well. So I think that focus of how do companies skill their people and their leaders so that they can get the best out of people when they're working alone, and also to help them to work more effectively as teams, both inside and outside of the office. I think that's going to be a major challenge for companies to work through. And I think that we'll be tied to perhaps some of these more macro points as well around the continuation of COVID or whatever the next thing is, the impact of environmental issues. We're kind of forgetting a little bit about what's happening in the world. But if you happen to be in one of those places that's having the next natural disaster because of the global warming position, I think that that's going to have a big impact as well, because many of the major cities, of course, are in danger spots of flooding or some kind of catastrophe. So maybe there'll be less people over the next 5 to 10 years thinking about moving to a big city to work, because it may be that they don't end up being the safest places. So I definitely think that there will be a balance of at home and remote work, and an extended and continued use of marketplaces and other means of accessing talent that companies can select from a global talent pool, rather than from the more traditional mechanisms that they had available to them previously. Otherwise, I think they may find that they'll be substituted in their market by more nimble new entrants.
Mark, thanks for that. Absolutely fascinating. And I think your last 2 points I fully agree with. And it's a really interesting vision of the future of work that you've outlined. So, Mark, I have to say I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for that. And Mark, where is the best place for our listeners to find you?
Thanks, Connor. Our website's probably the best place. It's www.lavasource.co.uk. We'll be adding lavasourcehr.com shortly, but that's definitely the best single place for us. We're also on LinkedIn and all the usual social media locations. And we'd be really, really keen for people to come on board, look at what we've got, and hopefully we can find you some work. And if you're a customer, hopefully we can find you the talent that you're looking for as quickly as you might hope and expect. And thanks very much for giving me the opportunity to come on and speak with you today, Colin.
Wonderful, Mark. I've really enjoyed it, Mark, and thanks again for your time. So, Mark, have a great rest of the day. Take care of yourself, and we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Connor.